It is Missionary Family Week on Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for helping us tell stories of missionaries and other families. And so thanks to Concordia University, Wisconsin, for their support of Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO. You can find them in the sponsor section on our website, kfuo.org. Today, we head to Eastern Africa to meet the Clausing family, the Reverend Jonathan and Anita Clausing, and children serving the Lord in Eastern Africa. Good evening, Clausing family. It's morning here in St. Louis, but I understand it's evening where you are.
That's right. That's right.
Good evening.
Glad to have you all here this evening. I know the children be joining us for part of the program today as well. Is that right?
That's right. They're in the next room, and we can call them in a moment whenever you need them.
All right. We'll have them join us in a little bit here, in a little while. Well, so looking forward to sharing your story. Thanks for spending some time with us via Skype this evening to hear about the Lord's work in Eastern Africa. Now, as I understand it, you all are based in Kenya. Is that right?
That's right. We live in Nairobi, or in the greater metropolitan Nairobi area.
Oh, very good. Now, let's talk a little bit about the early days of the Clausing family. How did the Clausing family meet? Where did Jonathan and Anita meet? And tell us a little bit about that story, the early days of the Clausing family.
Sure. It all began, in fact, I can state the exact date, on May 31st, 1995. That is the day I met my wife. It turned out that we were both camp counselors at Camp Lewisimo up in Wisconsin. And that was the first day of staff orientation. And so we got to meet each other and we worked together that summer. Email was new at that time. So after we both went back to college, we went to different universities. We kept in touch and we started dating after that. And we eventually became engaged and got married.
Well, it all starts at camp. That's where I met my wife at camp as well, and very thankful for the experience we had to learn and grow at Camp Luther Haven in Albion, Indiana. And there are lots of great marriages that begin at camp. Isn't that true?
It is true. You really get to know a person.
You see them in their best and in their worst, you know, when they haven't showered in 3 days and they might be a little tired because campers were up in the middle of the night. Yeah. You see them at their
exactly.
best and worst.
It's kind of good practice for being a parent in that sense.
Indeed. You were married, and when did you start thinking about seminary and the ministry, Jonathan?
It was actually also due to my experience at camp. I have my undergraduate degree in agricultural studies from Iowa State University. So I was originally going to farm. My brother still farms with my dad in northern Illinois. But it was the following summer, 1996, I was at Lutheran Valley Retreat in Colorado. And that summer, two different men, one a pastor, one the director of the camp, both suggested to me about 1 week apart, but independently, that I should consider studying for the ministry. And so it was as a result of that I really started looking into it. I went to one of the fall visitation weekends and took my then fiance, Anita, and that's how we got into the seminary.
And when you were studying at the seminary, did you all think that serving as missionaries was that even on your radar at that point in time?
It was. And that actually goes even further back. I first started thinking about missions way back when I was in high school. It was when I was a senior in high school, and I had already been accepted at Iowa State to study for agriculture. But we had a missionary come to our church, Emmanuel Lutheran in Belvedere, Illinois. And he, as a result of his presentation, I really thought that maybe this is what I will do with my life. Now, originally, my original plan was, well, I'll continue then with my agriculture degree, and maybe I can do some sort of foreign service connected with the Christian church, but pertaining to agriculture, teach crop rotation, fertilization, things like that. But then after, obviously that changed once we went to the seminary. And I was still thinking of missions when I was in the seminary, but it just turned out at that time that when I graduated in 2004, there weren't a lot of calls going out to the mission field. In fact, that was a time when many were coming back. And so the opportunity just wasn't there. And then I also discovered during my vicarage and my time at seminary that I really loved to teach. Teaching confirmation class was my favorite thing to do on vicarage and working with the youth in the church. And so after that, during my fourth year at the seminary, I was interviewed by Lutheran High School and I became a theology teacher, which I did for 11 years.
Anita, tell me about your studies and your plans along the way, too, as we've heard about Jonathan's plans for that led up to becoming a missionary. What were you studying?
I went to Concordia Seward, now Concordia University, and I had a major in Director of Christian Education and also Secondary Ed. I like John said, I met him at camp, and he had already knew that he would like to someday be a missionary. So even before we thought about getting married, I knew that I'd be possibly marrying a person who might someday be a missionary. So that's about it.
So when did you all start making plans, find out that serving as missionaries was a real possibility? When did that all start to solidify?
I remember that moment, too. It was when we received the Reporter newspaper, and there was an insert. And since then, I've seen this poster at countless churches as we as we toured around the states. But it said, Africa needs missionaries. And then it listed the different possibilities or the different positions that were open. And one of them was MDiv theological educator. And so, you know, looking at that, I thought, wow, I've been teaching theology for 11 years. I'm a theological educator. Maybe this is something to look into. So there was a little contact email at the bottom. And that is how I got in touch with Dan McMiller. And we got the whole process going for this call.
When did you find out that you would be going to Eastern Africa?
It was January of 2015. Let's see. So yeah, it was last January that I received the call. And we had strong hints before that would be the case. Because when I said I was a theological educator, Dan McMiller said that East Africa is the place that they're really looking for teachers of theology. So I think we knew already, or we had hints in late 2014, but we knew for sure in January 2015.
So then what did you know about Eastern Africa, those parts of Africa, prior to your preparation, your orientation for service as missionaries? What familiarity did you have with Eastern Africa before this?
Very, very little. In fact, when I first heard it, I had to look at a map to see where Kenya and Tanzania and Uganda and all these countries are. You know, I knew roughly where they were, but I did not know the geography very well. So we learned kind of from square one. we knew very little before this.
And let's talk about then that preparation for making the transition to Eastern Africa. Now, you were serving, where were you at the time that you were, before you made this decision to go serve as missionaries?
Yeah, I was serving as director of campus ministry at Lutheran High School of St. Charles County, Missouri. It's on the northwest side of St. Louis. As far as preparation then, one of the biggest aspects of the preparation is the reading list that our regional director, Pastor Shawn Trump, assigned us to read. And I don't know how many books it was, my wife says nine different books on East African culture, on theology, on financial matters, on just the whole spectrum of life in East Africa. And I can say it gave us about the best preparation we could have before coming here, you know, short of actually coming and visiting. It was very thorough and very insightful. And so once we got here, a lot of the things we've seen, it was kind of, aha, I read about that, you know, so we felt very well prepared.
So let's talk about making that transition then. How do you get your family ready to make that transition? Who makes up the Clausing family first, Anita?
Well, John and I, and we have 9 children.
And so how do you prepare a family of 11 to go and serve in another country on the other side of the world? Tell me about some of the preparations to get all the kids ready, get the whole household ready.
Well, for me personally, I was kind of in charge of getting our house ready to sell. So I had to, you know, do the typical things you do when you put your house on the market: paint, fix things that are broken. We updated our kitchen a little bit and our backyard. We had to get rid of most of our belongings and pack 44 suitcases.
44 suitcases. I'm trying to picture that in my mind.
A lot.
What did
we thank God that they all arrived here with us in Nairobi. We actually did not lose a single one.
Wow.
So it was good.
Awesome.
That's amazing. Now, what questions did the children have before making that transition? What questions did they have? How did you talk about moving to Kenya?
Yeah, it was that we didn't have like any kind of formal sit down talks too much. Well, we had one formal sit down talk right before I accepted the call. In that, you know, we wanted to make sure that everyone was on board before we came. Everyone had veto power because we didn't want to bring the kids against their will. But other than that, it was just informal discussion. Every once in a while, we'd find books at the library pertaining to life in Africa, you know, what it's like to go to school in Africa, what kids do, you know, that sort of thing. And we'd see, TV shows and things, you know, documentaries. So we'd watch those and then we'd talk about it. Another experience that we all had together is, since we spent the better part of a year traveling around the United States, raising the funds for the mission, I took the kids with us, or we took the kids with us for most of those trips. So they got to hear me teach Bible class and explain what we were doing and answer questions. And you know, they would always ask questions afterward too. And so it was just... it was a long and gradual transition coming over here. So it wasn't abrupt. They had many months in which to kind of digest the life that was to come, that sort of thing.
So let's talk about making that transition, that first week getting settled in there in Kenya.
Sure. It was actually, you know, for the first 6 months or 7 months, it was kind of transition after transition. When we landed in Nairobi, we spent the first days here in Nairobi, the first 10 days, doing field orientation. It was not only us, but Sarah Kanoy, who is a nurse with the LCMS, and the Stinnett family and the Raby family, we all arrived together. And so at the LCMS office in Nairobi, Pastor Trump did an orientation for a week and a half, and it gave us more thorough orientation on, you know, just culture, policies, procedure, everything we would need to know. And then during that also, the kids had some fun activities to do, you know, while the adults were in meetings. So that was the very first week. It wasn't like settling into our new house by any means. We were staying at a guest house, but we went through, a week and a half of orientation.
What, let's talk a little bit about getting settled in your new home, and learning about the community, the culture, and what that was like, you know, finding a home and getting settled in. How did you find a place to live? And, how was that similar or different from where you lived here in the United States?
Sure. Well, and there's one other big piece to the transition. So after those initial 10 days in Nairobi, we actually moved down to Tanzania for 3 months for language school. I took full-time classes, and Anita and the older kids took part-time classes because they continued with their homeschooling lessons also. So that was also, we were in cabins at sort of a rustic camp outside of Iringa in Tanzania. Finally, at the end of that, in the middle of May, we came back to Nairobi. And so then we began the process of searching for a house. And that was also a long transition. Because right away, 2 days after we arrived here in the middle of May, we picked out one house. But then it turned out that just we were very much delayed in getting the contract for that. And then when we received the contract, there were some things that did not seem good about that. And so we decided not to take that house. So by then it was early June. So we began looking at a different house, which actually is the one that we have now. When we finally decided we'd like this one, we then learned that the current tenants weren't moving out as soon as they thought. So it was not going to be until the 8th of July that we could actually move in. So we were in about a 2 month transition, in Nairobi, waiting to get into this house. Part of that time we lived in a guest house. Part of the time we lived in Pastor Trump's old house. Another complication is our office is moving right now, and so the Trump family moved to a different house, which made theirs available, so we stayed there for a little bit. So just to make a long story short, when we finally moved in here into this house, which is our own house, everyone was overjoyed. Because for the last year and a half, we'd been in transition. We always knew we were waiting to move to the next place. And, you know, that takes a toll on everyone. I remember... my three-year-old Elijah, when we'd been here a couple of days, and he asked us, "So when are we moving next?" and it was wonderful to be able to say, "We're not moving again. This is our home." And so, so it's very good. We've been here now. What is this? We've been here 2 months, and it's very good to just have a place that we can call home. It's very good. The kids have enough bedrooms now. We're not cramped in the tiny banda. So we're very blessed to be here.
We'll talk with them here in the second half of the program, learn more from them about making that transition and what they've learned since they've been there. Let's talk about the mission itself, the work that you're given to do there in Eastern Africa. What are your chief responsibilities?
Yes, and I kind of say that in two parts. My chief responsibilities for this year are two. One is learn Swahili as well as I can. And the second is to meet people, particularly meeting the leaders of our partner churches in the East African region. So I've met with two of the archbishops already, and next week I'll be meeting with two more. But long term, beginning next year, my work will be with theological education. And the situation in East Africa is because of, you know, the work of the Holy Spirit through God's word, the church has grown rapidly. And there are good problems in that there are more congregations, more Lutheran congregations, than there are pastors. And so the training of pastors and leaders in the church is a big challenge. Many of the pastors, well, first of all, we have seminaries that are training the pastors. And so the long-term goal, of course, is to train up men in a four-year curriculum and get well-equipped men pastoring the congregations. In the meantime, though, many of these pastors are serving congregations that are, you know, half a dozen congregations, sometimes 10, 12 congregations. And so they cannot visit every one of their congregations every Sunday for preaching. And so they have evangelists that are working under their supervision, but preaching and teaching the word in their absence. My calling specifically is to help to provide some supplementary education to these evangelists as far as preaching and teaching.
And so how has that been a help to those who are already there? Tell me about the team that you're working with there.
Do you mean the team working out of the Nairobi East Africa field office?
Who are the others that you're working with? Are there other missionaries that you're working with there?
I'm the only one particularly working with this theological program. But we have Sarah Kanoi, who I mentioned is a nurse. She lives here in Nairobi. And she travels throughout the region working with medical clinics. The other two families I mentioned, the Stinnett family and the Raby family, they live in Addis Ababa up in Ethiopia. And they are both professors at the seminary up there with the Evangelical Lutheran Church Makani Jesus up in Ethiopia. We also have Charlie Froh and Tom Odland, both pastors, who teach at Matongo Seminary out in Matongo, west of in Western Kenya, nearer to Lake Victoria. They teach a variety of classes at the four-year seminary there. So there's a variety of different people doing different things.
So it certainly is a partnership, it sounds like, with many people serving in a variety of areas, helping to support the Christians that are there and to continue to bring the good news of Jesus.
Yes, yes. In fact, two others that I forgot to mention. Britt Odemba works with education in elementary education. There's a elementary Lutheran school at the edge of the Kibera slum here in Nairobi. So she has greatly helped that school along with its program. And then Shara Cunningham also works here. She helps to coordinate mission teams that are coming over from the States. So she's just a coordinator for the different groups coming over. We also, just about a month and a half ago, welcomed John Wolfe and his family. They are actually in Tanzania at language school right now, but he is the project's coordinator for the whole continent of Africa. So we even a greater variety of different things going on.
I'm glad you mentioned language school for fellow missionaries. Let's talk about language where you live. How many languages are commonly in use where you live?
The two most common here in Nairobi are Swahili and English. And I would say in normal use, as far as road signs, billboards, English is the most common. And virtually everyone speaks English as far as professionals in Nairobi, though I hear quite a bit of Swahili also. It's a little different in Tanzania. There, Swahili definitely predominates. There were many more people we met there who spoke only Swahili, which actually makes it a better place for learning Swahili because you're forced to use it all the time. Here in Nairobi, I have a language tutor who still helps me, and that's very useful. Because it's sometimes difficult to practice Swahili otherwise. If you go to the store and I greet someone in Swahili or ask a question in Swahili, they will answer in English because they want to practice their English. So it's difficult to practice here sometimes.
And speaking of learning and studying, I'd like to talk about school, but we'll do that when we come back from the break, and we'll bring in the rest of the family to join us, all the children to join us for the conversation. We'll talk about school and other things that they're learning as well in Nairobi. You're listening to Faith and Family. It's Missionary Family Week. We're talking with Jonathan and Anita Clausing, who serve the Lord in Eastern Africa. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
Extreme premature babies are a major health crisis around the world. Little Amelia was born at 26 weeks, weighing only 8 ounces. But after 9 months in the hospital, she went home with her parents. New technology's making it possible to save babies even younger. A recent study in the New England Journal of Medicine revealed about a quarter of those born at just 22 weeks actually survive. Many well-intentioned doctors don't treat these babies because of the odds, but this is changing. You and I can help get the word out because a baby's life may literally depend upon it. There's a documented database of extreme premature babies who've survived. Visit lifeissues.org and click on the microphone icon to access it. Then please share it widely.
Follow us on Twitter at lifeissuesusa and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
God's word is our great heritage and shall be ours forever. To spread its light from age to age shall be our chief endeavor. I'm William Whedon, LCMS Director of Worship, inviting you to be sure and join us as we romp through chapter after chapter of the Sacred Scriptures, rejoicing in the salvation that's ours in Jesus Christ. Join us.
Thy Strong Word, weekday mornings at 11 on Worldwide KFUO. Underwritten by Lutheran Heritage Foundation, lhfmissions.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, on behalf of Concordia Plan Services, Lutheran Church Extension Fund, the LCMS Foundation, Lutheran Housing Support Corporation, Concordia University System, and Corporate Synod, daily reaches out to our members and partners, working together to support our local, global, and international ministries, church workers, and LCMS initiatives at large to carry the mission forward and to serve each other in love. Opportunities to serve, lcms.org/jobsboard.
Worldwide KFUO has been listener-supported since 1924, teaching the good news of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection for our sins, and witnessing to the world about God's mercy. We are on AM 850 in St. Louis and a click away 24 hours a day at kfuo.org. If you have questions about donating, you can email us, gifts@kfuo.org.
Join the fun and festivities at Lutheran Elementary School Association's Brew in the Lou, Saturday, October 15th at a new location on the grounds of Francis Park in St. Louis Hills. Enjoy delicious food and drink, oompah with the Deutschmeister Brass Band, and visit booths filled to the brim with various crafts. Proceeds benefit more than 8,500 children in Lutheran schools in the St. Louis metro area. Information and wristbands are on the phone at 314-200-0797. For Brew in the Lou.
Worldwide KFUO, your most trusted radio station for Christian talk and sacred music. Listen on the air, online, and on demand 24 hours a day at kfuo.org. Listen anywhere you are with your Wi-Fi radios, smartphones, computers, and even on your smart TVs. KFUO embracing today's technologies to bring the good news message of Christ to the world. Listener-supported Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is Missionary Family Life Week here on Faith and Family. We are talking with the Clausing family, serving the Lord in Eastern Africa and in Kenya. And it is evening for them. They're winding down their day. The Reverend Jonathan and Anita Clausing. And now the children will be joining us as well for this part of the program. Let's take some time now to introduce the Clausing family. We've got Pastor and Anita with us. And would you like to introduce yourselves as part of the Clausing family today?
Sure. I'll have each of them say their name and their age. I brought in just the oldest four because they will be able to sit through the discussion. We thought the little ones might cry. But yeah, if we can go from Emil first and then Ellie and Ernie and Eunice.
I'm Emil. I'm 16.
I'm Ellie. I'm 14.
I'm Ernie. I'm 12.
I'm Eunice. I'm 10.
Well, thank you all for being here today and being our guests on Faith and Family, sharing with all our listeners your story of life in Africa. Now, when you first found out that Mom and Dad were talking about moving to Africa, we'll start with Emil. Emil, what did you think about the idea of possibly moving to Africa?
I was super excited because I've always wanted to be a missionary. So I was like, oh yeah, we really, really have to do this.
And let's see, is it Ellie? Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Ellie, what do you think?
Yes.
I was excited too, because I've never even been out of the United States, so it was pretty cool.
And is it Ernie? Is that correct?
Yes.
Ernie, what did you think?
I was excited, but I was kind of scared because I've never been out of the United States before.
And Eunice, right?
Yep.
What did you think, Eunice, when you found out you might be moving to Africa?
I was excited but sad because we had to leave everything we had.
And we'll talk more in just a little bit about what you've been learning and what you think about it now that you are there. Mom and Dad, let's talk about making that transition. What were your options for education when you started looking at moving to Kenya? What were the options that that you were considering?
Anita, you want to answer that?
There are many options here in Kenya. We could have sent our children to international school. But in the United States, before we accepted the call to be missionaries, I homeschooled the kids. So we decided that we would like to homeschool also in Kenya. And you're able to do that here. So that's what we chose to do.
So everybody's homeschooling right now. Is that correct?
Yes. Our oldest three attend a school that is online called Wittenberg Academy, mm-hmm. and the rest are taught by me.
So everybody's studying at home. It's a busy place then during school time at the Clausing home.
Yes.
Well, what did, now that you've made this transition and moved to Kenya, let's talk with the kids again. Let's talk about what you're learning about life there in Kenya. Perhaps one or two things that you've learned about life or culture there in Kenya. Emil?
The roads are a lot slower than the roads in America. You have to be rather careful when you're driving. And...
Now, Emil, are you driving in Kenya?
No, you have to be 18 here. So I'm not 18 yet.
Some time before that. How about you, Ellie? What are some things, one or two things that you've been learning about life in Kenya?
She's blanking out.
That's okay. What are some things that that you've liked, or perhaps something that you found you really like about life in Kenya? Whether it's about where you live or something about the culture, Ernie.
Something you really like, Ernie. Okay, come on.
That's okay.
Eunice, do you have something you really like? Okay, Eunice has something.
What do you like?
I like our house here since it has a pool here.
Okay, could you say that again? I think our connection got a little interrupted there just for a moment.
I like our house here, and I like that we get to have dogs because they're part of security, but they're also fun.
Very good. Well, let's talk about what you've been learning about the culture. Has anyone been studying Swahili? I know Dad has learned a little bit of Swahili. What about everybody else in the family? Anybody else learning Swahili as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, they all have. All these four have.
Everybody's learning some Swahili. Very good. Well, let's talk about meeting the people around you. Have you had a chance to make friends in the area where you live, meet some other people?
Yeah, we have. In fact, my wife was just talking with our neighbor today. It's a little bit more difficult to meet people because there's fences and gates and hedges for security around all of the houses, so you don't just see your neighbor mowing his lawn and so that you can shout over to him. But we're getting to meet the people who are right next to us, just across the hedges from us, that sort of live on the connected properties. And then also the community of the office. There are a lot of, or several, workers from Nairobi who also help us out in our office and also at our church, Uhuru Highway down in downtown Nairobi. We have friends that we see there every week when we go to worship.
What would you say, we'll start with Anita on this one, what would you say are some of the bigger cultural differences or practices that are taking some time to adjust to?
I think if you've studied cultures, there's certain terms. The United States is more of a cold culture where people are communicating directly. And in Africa, it's more of a warm culture where it's not polite to say no or just be frank, I guess, like it is in the United States. So that definitely has, it's a challenge because you have to communicate differently here than what you're used to from living in the United States.
Is there perhaps an example you could give us where that you've seen that it's such a difference?
I'll get one.
Okay, John, I'll get one for you.
This is kind of the classic one that everyone notices when they first arrive. That in America we live very much by the clock, and everything needs to be punctual. So to be early is to be on time. If you say you're going to meet at 6 p.m., you should be there at 5:55. Whereas in Africa, people come first. And so you don't leave a meeting to rush off to another appointment until you've properly greeted people and said goodbye and spent some time with them. So things are a little more slow-paced here. And it's okay. If something's supposed to start at 6 and not everyone comes till 6:20 or 6:30, that's just fine because people are important.
I think there's a particular phrase that some use about Americans having watches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Americans have watches and Kenyans have time.
Yeah.
Yep. Is that...
If you want another example?
Sure.
Sorry. If you go into a grocery store, they have people selling samples to promote their product, like you would have at Sam's Club. And instead of if they offer you food in the United States, you would say no, thank you. But here in Kenya, you just say not today. That's the polite response.
So it's not you're not directly saying no. It's an indirect way, just saying not today.
Correct. Not today.
How long did it take to learn that one?
A long time. It's hard to break habits. Mm-hmm. You know, I lived in the United States for 41 years, so it's hard to break things that you're familiar with, the ways you usually communicate.
In fact, in the States, we teach our children. We say, just be frank with me. Just be direct. Be clear. You know, get right to the point. Don't beat around the bush. Whereas here, that is rude. And so you want to be clear, but you say it in an indirect sort of way in order to be polite and to respect the other person's feelings.
Other things that you've learned about the culture in the community where you live. We've talked about common phrases and communication and time, how that is regarded in that culture. What about let's talk about food. That's one of my favorite things. Let's talk about what role food plays in daily life there in Kenya.
We could say there are certainly just a variety of different foods, some things that are just, we're used to them now, but they were new when we first came. Chapati is a kind of a flat bread that is very common, but we have it quite pretty much all the time now. Ugali is sort of a corn-based, starchy type food. It's kind of white. It kind of looks like mashed potatoes. That's also very common. There are mandazi, there are rolls. So things that they were just new, but they've become very common to us now. In Nairobi here, though, you can get a lot of Western-type foods as well. So it's kind of a, you can get quite a variety here in Nairobi. In that, I guess one other thing to add is here in Nairobi, it is almost, I wouldn't even say almost, it is a different culture here in Nairobi compared to the rest of rural Africa, just because Nairobi is so influenced by international business and by Western culture.
All right. Well, we have to ask all the, we have to ask the kids about their favorite food and least favorite food in their new culture there. So let's start with Eunice. What's your new favorite food there in Kenya, and what have you not liked so much?
My favorite food is eggs.
Eggs. And which one have, okay, of the new foods that you've tried, which one have you liked the least?
Which is your least favorite new food? Like of ugali, chapati, mandazi, something else?
Ugali.
Okay.
Ernie, how about you?
She said ugali.
Ugali. Ernie, how about you? What's your favorite new food there in Kenya?
My favorite new food is chapati, and my least favorite food is ugali.
You like the bread, huh?
It is. It's tasty.
It's really yummy.
Ellie, how about you?
I'm the same as Ernie. I like chapati, and I don't really like ugali.
Emil?
I really like sukumu wiki, which is like, is it spinach?
Kale.
It's like kale, and it's really like spicy and salty. It's really good. And I don't like ugali because it's just kind of tasteless.
Okay, so it sounds like ugali is not a favorite in the household.
Correct.
I think that's fair, yeah.
Anita, how about you? What are some of the foods that that you've enjoyed that you're liking in your new culture and your least favorite?
I really like mandazi, and those are similar slightly to an American donut without any toppings like cinnamon or sugar. They're a dough that's slightly sweet that is fried in oil. And my least favorite is definitely ugali, just like the kids.
I've heard that from short-term missionaries as well. It has to be something you grow up with, I'm sure, in order to like it.
Yes.
How about you, Jonathan?
I would have to agree with Emil that I've really come to love kale, the way that it's prepared here. I frankly never eaten it, you know, much at all in the States. But the way they shred it up and whatever spices they put on it, it's very good. And not to give ugali a bad name, but that's probably my least favorite also.
Frankly, all 11 of us do not like ugali. It's pretty across the board.
Well, it'd be hard for the one person that did like ugali in the household.
Yes.
They wouldn't get it very often, I'm sure.
No.
What about spices, the use of spices and things like that in typical Kenyan food?
I would say it's not terribly different than the States in that the food isn't super spicy and it's not super bland either. There's different spices, but I'm not a cook that I know what I like to eat, but I can't necessarily name all the spices. What are you guys' opinions?
Do you want to talk, Ellie? No. they use a spice called marsala for tea, and marsala palau, or did I say it backwards? Palau marsala. I'm not really a cook, frankly, so I probably shouldn't be talking. But those are the two new spices that I've noticed from the spices that I owned in the United States. So the marsala that they put in the tea is very tasty. And tea is, if you would go to a person's house, they would serve you chai, mm-hmm. and that has the spice in it.
What's a typical breakfast in Kenya, Anita?
I'm not really sure if I know. Probably John should answer this question.
Many of the things are similar to the States. Eggs are very common. Sometimes there will be sausages. They're different sausages, but they're pork sausage. One unique thing is brown beans is very common for breakfast. And, you know, we eat brown beans in the States, but not usually for breakfast. And then toast also. So in many ways, it's similar to the States. There's a lot of, because Kenya is a former British colony, there's a lot of English influence also. And there's a mixture of cultures. It's not all traditional African food that's common, but a lot of stuff that has already been imported. It might have been introduced a couple hundred years ago, but it's still European in origin.
What about other meals, lunch, dinner, or other times of day that you might have a meal or other times that you would gather around food?
Do you want to answer, Anita? Okay. Meals tend to be later than in the States. Lunch is often as late as 1:30, and then supper will be 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. I suspect that part of that is due to the fact that since we're right on the equator, it always gets dark, both in July and December, about 6:30, between 6:30 and 7. And so I think people are just accustomed to eating when it gets dark. So meals are very often later. And also having tea time is very common, mid-morning and mid-afternoon. So you could sometimes sit down to eat as many as 5 times a day.
I would be okay with that. Anything else that's been a new experience for you when it comes to food and meals?
Anything else you guys want to share? One other thing we've noticed is many folks will hire house help. And so a lot of people have their... have a cook cook their meals for them. And, you know, at first it seems like that is sort of, you know, outlandish, but it's a way to support the local economy. And in many ways, it's expected, just that you're helping out, you know, giving someone a job. So a lot of people have others do their cooking for them. We don't right now, but we've talked about it.
What do you think about that, Anita?
Of having a cook?
Yes.
That sounds wonderful. I am, by, I don't know, nature, not a great cook. And so we're just trying to find the perfect one right now. So we'll see. We're kind of patient about it. We really want to make a good decision. And so we're going about it pretty slowly. Because that person will be in our home, they will be a part of our family, and we really want to make a good decision about it.
Certainly, yeah. I would imagine that takes some prayerful consideration, most certainly. Well, speaking of your home, let's talk about a typical home in Kenya. Is there a typical home, and what is life like in the home in Kenya?
I don't know if you could say there is a typical home. You, in fact, you couldn't say there's a typical home, but there are different kinds. You know, out in rural Kenya, homes are made of sticks and mud. I guess you could say that's a typical home, you know, far out. And so it just runs the gamut from those homes up to, you'll see houses here in Nairobi that are mansions that are as big as anything in the United States. Our own home, I like to say it's older than Kenya. it's a very old house built back in the colonial era. So I don't even know what year it was built, but it's been added on to several times. And so I would say in the area we live, ours is, it's a typical old house. It's kind of from the British era, from early 20th century.
What about things, you know, here in the United States, we're pretty used to typical utilities that, you know, electricity, phone, internet, cable, things like that, and air conditioning, all those things that might be luxuries in other parts of the world. What about there in Kenya?
Again, it depends on where in Kenya you are. Here in Nairobi, we're very blessed because this is a modern city. So we have all of the basic utilities. Obviously, I'm speaking to you over the internet right now, and it's fast enough to carry this connection. But there are some definite differences also. We don't have a dishwasher. We don't have a microwave. I don't know if our listeners noticed this, but right at the break, we lost power. And so we lost our internet connection, but we have a generator, and it took a couple moments for that to kick on. Power goes out much more frequently here than in the United States. I guess one other thing is, you know, we have a supply of water, but we purify our water just because city water is not necessarily safe to drink. You don't want to take chances with that. So we have our basic utilities like we have in the States, but there's just some things that are different about most everyone.
You were mentioning that losing power during the break, and so you have a generator to help back up that. Is that common for families to have a generator or not as common?
It's very common. Virtually every business and most houses, you know, that are, you know, up sort of up to Western standards, they have a generator. And from what I hear, that even now power doesn't go out as frequently as it used to, you know, 5-10 years ago. But it still goes out, I would say, several times every week. Mm-hmm. So it's worth it to keep that generator full of diesel fuel.
And you mentioned having internet service, which is certainly helpful. What about when it comes to communications? Is that mostly over the internet? Or, you know, here in the United States, we have this large infrastructure of landlines for telephones, and now cell phones have kind of taken over. What's the scenario there in Kenya?
Yeah, for us, we rely on internet for many things. In fact, we even have an internet service that lets us connect to a U.S. number so we can call the United States with a free connection over the internet. Regarding phones, believe it or not, I never owned a cell phone before I came to Africa. but here, it's a necessity. And you could say the whole telephone system has skipped a step. In that, in the States, like you mentioned, there's a network of telephone lines which are becoming, you know, increasingly obsolete. Here in Africa, they have just skipped directly to cell phones. So our house doesn't even have a landline. And it's surprising, or at least it was when I first came here, that virtually all Africans have a cell phone, even to the extent that when you're driving out in the countryside and you see the Maasai herding their sheep, you know, a guy wearing the traditional Maasai garb and he'll have sandals and he's got his stick in one hand and his cell phone in the other hand. there's cell towers all over, so people use them frequently. Kenya isn't even advanced of the United States in that there's a way, there's a system called M-Pesa where you can pay your bills and just give money to other people just by using your cell phone. And it's extremely common. So, cell phones are a big deal here.
It sounds like they play an important part in the economy there as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we are just about out of time. I want to thank everyone for sharing your story with us and point them to the web as well. We can follow your story on lcms.org/clausing. We'll provide a link to that as well with the archive of today's program so they can find you and find your blog as well and find out what's going on. Keep up with the Clausing family in Eastern Africa. Thank you to the Reverend Jonathan and Anita Clausing and all the kids. Pastor, thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much for having us.
And Anita, thanks so much for being my guest. And Emil, Ellie, Ernie, Eunice, thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Thank you.
God's blessings to the Clausing family. Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, you're listening to Worldwide KFUO.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.